This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah.
The band The Doors explored the dark side of life in the late 1960s. The band took its name from a line in a William Blake poem about opening the doors of perception. A cult following developed around their lead singer, Jim Morrison, who wrote lyrics about his obsessions with sex, death, and insanity. He lived a life of excess and died of a heart attack in 1971 at the age of 27. My guest John Densmore was the drummer of The Doors during the 6 years they existed. He's written a memoir about that time called Riders on the Storm. A feature film about The Doors will be opening next year, directed by Oliver Stone. Densmore was a consultant for the film and has a small part in it. Jim Morrison died and was buried in Paris. John Densmore didn't attend his funeral, but he did visit his grave in 1975. I asked him to describe what the gravesite looked like.
Well, definitely old Europe with moss-covered gravestones and cats scurrying into crypts. Cobblestone lanes, and then the graffiti, Morrison this way, acid lives, carved into tombstones near Baudelaire and Edith Piaf.
What did you find disturbing about what you saw?
Disturbing. Well, as you read, I'm kind of angry at Jim, and it took me, dare I say, a couple years to get there, you know. I'm angry at his self-destruction. And by the end of the book, I'm more philosophical, as I am now, and I was angrier then. And this book was a 10-year catharsis. And does that answer it?
Well, I think, you know, that you were not only angry with Morrison, but it sounds like you were angry at the people who glamorized his craziness.
Well, he said that he consciously and unconsciously built the myth. I think what he meant unconsciously was, you know, the media tends to really get going. But he was a smart guy, so he dropped lines like, think of us as erotic politicians, and that's a good hook, of course, and writers go, hey, and off we go.
Do you feel like at the time you played into that glamorization at all?
Well, we wanted to make it. I mean, we wanted to be as big as we could. We also wanted to say something. We wanted to make a living and all, but we really hoped to say some things. One wonders whether it went too far. This question, well, if you had to do it over, would you do it different? Always bugs me, but I usually say, well, of course I would do it different because hopefully I learned something by what I went through. But by the same token, if I did it different, I wouldn't like who I am now. So, next question.
Let me ask that one again, though. I don't think we really got to the answer.
Did I get
here.
Around that?
Yeah. Let me ask this again. Do you think that you personally participated in the glamorization of Morrison's craziness?
No. I played my drums, and I tried to quit.
To quit the band?
Mm-hmm. I let Jim know that I didn't like what was happening, and around the third album, I threw my sticks down and said, I'm out of here. And I came back a few days later, a career and something I was real passionate about, music, and didn't know what to do. I was a drummer, and I loved what we did together, and that was my angst, that being in a band with a wild man.
It must have been awfully hard to really walk away from a band like The Doors.
Yeah, that's why I came back.
You said that Jim Morrison courted insanity and nearly dragged down the rest of the band with him. How did he court insanity?
Well, Jim tested people. He certainly was into substance abuse. When you have a good friend and you also create something together that's even bigger than the two of you or the four of you, you'll go down that road a little further than you should, maybe. I don't think I went further than I should, but I definitely pulled back and wouldn't go drinking with him. And other books have said I wasn't Morrison's friend. I loved the guy, but I hated him for his self-destruction, and I had to take care of myself and pull away the last few years.
How much of the Morrison image do you think was a pose, and how much of it do you think was kind of out of his control?
Well, that's a good one. Oh, 50-50.
Yeah, what's the percentage?
Maybe in the beginning, certainly it was more, I hate the word pose. I mean, he did get posy, certainly, but he was smart, and he knew what he was doing, and he wanted to free up his mind as well as others. I love this thing he said about don't let people talk you out of your pain. That's part of you. Carry it around like a radio. Turn it up, turn it down, or whatever. Don't let them deny your pain. You know, the guy was a seeker. And maybe around the time when he penned, "I am the Lizard King, I can do anything," he turned a corner where the myth that was building, he started buying, or it started running him instead of the other way around. I thought back to when John Lennon wrote, "I'm not the walrus, I'm John," which is sort of more of a grounding kind of statement, as opposed to, "I'm the Lizard King, I can do anything."
John Densmore is my guest, and he was the drummer with The Doors, and he's written a new memoir called Riders on the Storm. Now, you are from a middle-class suburban background, and you say that music rescued you from that background. What did you feel specifically it rescued you from?
Well, that was coupled with a Catholic upbringing.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the 60s certainly were freeing in terms of sin.
If Morrison was the Lizard King, what was your image in the band?
Well, I wrote that at home in suburbia, it was the Ozzie and Harriet show, and I was Ricky. And the other day, a writer said to me, "Whoa, the book strikes me as Ricky Nelson Goes to Hell." I thought that was good. And back, thank you.
Tell us how the Doors got together, how you met the other musicians in the band.
Robbie Krieger and I were dabbling in psychedelics back as far as when LSD was actually legal. And this was before I smoked grass. And so I was real open and innocent and having wonderful transcendental experiences, but realizing that it's pretty hard on the body and it should be treated carefully, like peyote is sacred to the Indians. So Robbie said, "I heard about this meditation class." So we went to Maharishi's Transcendental Meditation class a couple years before the Beatles. Ray Manzarek was there. He's our keyboard player. He came up to me and said, "I hear you're a drummer. You want to rock and roll?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And he had his brothers playing guitar. They dropped out. They couldn't quite see Morrison's vision or see his potential, because when I first met him, I went down to Ray's parents' garage, and this guy was lurking in the corner with bare feet and a T-shirt and real good looking, real shy, and had these incredible words scribbled down on matchbooks. And so it began.
What were your early shows like when you started to play together as a group?
Well, the first club was the London Fog, a real sleazy place where we kind of were really just honing our stuff, and Jim wouldn't even face the audience. He was so nervous. We had this sort of circle of energy that we developed in rehearsal, and he didn't want to break it. Then we moved on to the Whiskey A Go-Go, became the house band, and we really opened up then, and we played everybody the Byrds, Captain Beefheart, Van Morrison, Frank Zappa. And as every group came in each week, we'd kind of, well, let's show them how good we are. And then the record people start coming around.
You write that when you started playing music, it wasn't yet cool to be a musician. It was cool to be an athlete, but not a musician. Mm. Then you become a musician, and it's real cool to be a musician. And I'm sure there were always groupies, you know, backstage or trying to get backstage. Were you surprised at quite how cool it became to be a musician?
Yeah, I didn't get it. I thought I was supposed to be a nerd, and now I'm cool. So I'm going to go back to high school now. Because it's cool, isn't it?
John Densmore is my guest, and he was the drummer with The Doors, and he's written a new memoir, and the memoir's called Riders on the Storm. You say that meeting Jim Morrison was the death of your innocence. When did you first start thinking of him as actually psychotic?
Well, I suppose the first incident was when I took him to his girlfriend's house, and I went out for a little while and came back, and the front door was ajar, and I kind of pushed it open, and Jim was holding a kitchen knife to Rosanna's stomach. Ha, ha, ha. He put it down and laughed as if it was a joke, and she was sort of laughing but sort of scared, and I thought I was in a band with a psychotic. And then I thought, I'm in a room with a psychotic. And, you know, I told Robbie, our guitar player, what am I doing in this? But this feels like it's so magical. That was the beginning.
Did you ever talk to Morrison about these things? The things that disturbed you?
Not that much. You know, the 60s were not big on verbal communication. They were more big on smoking joints and saying, far out, man.
I want to ask you about a now very well-known incident that happened during a Doors concert. And I'm thinking of the night that Jim Morrison said, let's see a little skin, let's get naked. So what happened after he said that?
He did not expose himself. It's true, Jim was drunk. He was getting into alcohol heavily. And he had just seen Julian Beck and Judith Malina's Living Theater, which was a very confrontational thing where they said, no passports, no visas, no boundaries, and they walked around the audience in little G-strings. And he was kind of fed up with us having to play the hits, but he was also getting burnt out, unfortunately, from substance abuse. So Miami, he tried to interject confrontational theater into our performance. Didn't tell us, of course. And he stopped songs and said things like that, and things like, don't let them shove you around in the .. of the world. And he took his shirt off and ran around, and he threw a cop's hat in the audience, and the cop threw his hat in the audience, and there's a lot of people on stage, so a security guard flipped him into the audience thinking he was a fan. It was real chaos. But sorry, folks, no exposure, no oral copulation. Jim didn't play an instrument, and he was real enamored with Robbie's guitar picking, as I was. He played flamenco, Robbie did, and it looked like a crab crawling across the strings. So he would get down on his knees and look at that, and hence we have obscenity charges. We paid the police for the hat, and everything was fine. We were laughing, left town for 4 days, and then we get these warrants. I think maybe some kids went home, I don't know, drunk or missing a shirt, and the parents, what is this? What have you been at? Let's call up the politicians. Let's get reelected. Well, yeah, rock and roll, it's moral decay. Let's get them. And then we have 30,000 people in the Orange Bowl with Anita Bryant and Jackie Gleason rallying for decency. We didn't play that one.
Oh, you didn't play their rally, huh? now, what did you do on stage when the police came on stage?
Well, I abandoned the stage when I heard it crack on the left side. Oh, and before that, there was a can of Orange Day Glow paint thrown on us. Quite a Oliver Stone's trying to duplicate this. So.
Oh, in his film about the Doors. Yeah.
So I jumped off the stage and I landed on the light board, and the whole thing collapsed.
Did the lights go out when that happened?
Just the stage lights. We're talking chaos, Terry. I remember going upstairs and watching Jim, you know, as I said, he got flipped into the audience, and the kids weren't hurting him or anything, and he started leading this kind of snake dance, and everyone was behind him, and it was wild from above. It looked like a whirlpool.
Did you hurt yourself when you fell on the light board?
No.
What did you do after you got up? Did you...
I ran up the stairs.
You were able to get away? I mean, it sounds like it was so chaotic and crowded.
Yeah, yeah. The stairs were right there going up to the dressing rooms.
And what did you say to Jim Morrison the next time you saw him?
Well, I didn't say much to Jim, you know, because I was intimidated by him at this point. And he came up and was sort of laughing, and I thought, oh, well, concert's better for a hangover than aspirin, okay. I was mad at him, you know, quite mad, because musically it was terrible. Theatrically, well, but I wasn't into theater then.
Oh, but you are now, right?
Yeah, I wrote a one-act play and stuff. So.
A different kind of theater in a way, I guess. Yeah. Well, at least it's one you're controlling. Now, what effect did these charges of lewd and lascivious behavior have on the band?
Well, it really ruined our live career for a year or so. And our manager said, oh, we've lost $1 million. And I'm thinking, good. I don't care. This is a runaway train here, and Jim's in trouble, and no one's stopping him. Not that he could be stopped, but we're all turning the other cheek or something because of commerce or some rubbish. I don't care, you know. Let's defuse this myth-building insanity a little bit. So that's what I felt.
So you stopped touring for a while because no one would book you?
Oh, yeah, a long time. But, you know, we could still record where we had control. If Jim was too loaded, we could shut down.
What changed that around? What opened up concerts to you again?
You know, time heals. I guess a year later or so, we started getting bookings, and we purposely booked smaller kind of Philharmonic halls, 5,000 seats, where the acoustics are better anyway. But it was too late. I remember Dallas was... a good gig. We played Riders on the Storm, and it hadn't been released yet, and we got a good response, and I thought, well, maybe we can have a new career here as kind of subtler, jazz-oriented, and, you know, a little more sophisticated. But the next night, Jim was pathetic. I just didn't have it at all, and finally, Ray and Robbie agreed to pack in the live performing, which I was trying to get to happen for about a year.
John Densmore is my guest, the Doors drummer and author of a new memoir called Riders on the Storm, My Life with Jim Morrison and the Doors. Did you go through a self-destructive period when you were with the Doors, and did you used to get loaded a lot?
No. I'd certainly dabbled. There was always an example of too far to go right there in front of me, so I was pretty careful. But I still have a drink now and then, and moderation seems to be my key.
Were you ever resentful that that Morrison got so much more attention than anyone else in the band did?
When we got the artwork for the first album cover, I said, I thought to myself, well, why is his head so big? You know, it covered the whole album, and I'm like in the corner. And then I thought, okay, well, so I guess he'll sell more records. I'll sell copies of Soldier of Fortune, so I'm small. Yeah, you know, but then I see what that bright spotlight does to you, you know, and I'm going, oh, okay, I'm glad I'm kind of just on the fringes here, getting just a little singed.
What were the immediate effects in your life when Morrison died?
I shoved it under the rug. I was so angry with him anyway. I mean, I was definitely very sad when Robbie told me, and I looked in Robbie's eyes, and I was pretty sure it was true. You know, there had been fake death rumors and stuff. And Ravi said he's finally achieved peace. It took me years to kind of grieve over him, and this book has been a lot of that stuff. So I continued playing music, and then I kind of got into acting, which got me into writing, which got me into getting out some of these feelings.
It's interesting. From your book, I know that you were introduced to the thinking of the poet Robert Bly.
Yeah.
And you got very involved with male sensitivity, male energy, getting in touch with the female side of the male, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is about as opposite as you could get from Jim Morrison as possible. And it seems to me that that's no coincidence. I mean, do you see your interest in that as being like a reaction to Morrison?
Jim was not quite as macho as he appears to be in those leathers. If you look at People Are Strange, you see really vulnerable lyrics. And so he could get it out that way. And he had a real sensitive side. And fortunately, Val Kilmer, the guy who's playing him, has that side, thank God. Because Oliver Stone writes the other side. I was kind of a flower child type. I don't know whether I would be getting involved in the men's supposed movement is a total reaction to Jim, but it's good stuff. It's sharing feelings, and like women have always done. It's healthy stuff.
I'm sure thousands of people have told you stories about what your records have meant to them. How often do you listen to your old records?
Well, I don't listen to them at home, Terry. I've heard them a lot in the studio. But if I'm in the car and someone chooses to play it, I get a little kick out of it. Not like when I first heard, the first time I ever heard anything on the radio, I was like, oh, that's me, you know? And I looked at the car next to me and I, nope. Are they listening? I think I'll roll down the window and turn it up. And I saw my book in the window of a bookstore a few weeks ago for the first time, and it was the same, surreal thrill.
I think perhaps what surprised me most in your book was that everyone in the band really liked Jose Feliciano's cover recording of Light My Fire.
Well, what's interesting is that he made it a ballad. He totally reinterpreted it, whereas Billy Idol's doing L.A. Woman right now, and it's good, but it's kind of copying our arrangement. And let's see, Aerosmith's done Love Me Two Times. And
what's the worst cover recording you've ever heard, here or abroad?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, those ones I hear in elevators, I hear a bunch of strings playing Light My Fire, and I go, what?
It doesn't capture your experience, huh? Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us. My guest has been John Densmore, drummer for The Doors and author of the new book, Riders on the Storm, My Life with Jim Morrison and The Doors. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.